The question was asked, how are we to view the state and when are we to take matters into our own hands? So before I address the question, I want to quote you a conversation I had with a soldier about a month or two ago. This soldier is serving with a specific battalion, and he said the following story. They were advancing against rioters, and he could see that as they were advancing along the wall, he had the left flank of the battalion, and to his left, he saw there was an enclave in the wall where there were Palestinians standing with clubs and rocks ready to hit the battalion that was advancing from the side. He was the only one who saw them. They were ready to ambush them. He asked his general, am I allowed to shoot? And his general said, I don't know. So his general bumped it up a notch, and he didn't get an answer. Now, he knew that if his life were at risk or if he felt their lives were at risk, he should shoot, but his own general wasn't convinced, and his own general wasn't telling him to shoot. And he was asking, under such circumstances, when do I have to follow orders, and when do I say, he doesn't think it's a risk, but I think their lives are at risk, and I have to shoot? That was his question. So before we discussed his question, I gave him the following scenario. Imagine you're sitting in an ambush. You're with a battalion, and there's one soldier who's creeping forward. And he's creeping forward, and that's his job, and you're all watching. And as you're watching, you see that a Hamasnik is creeping up behind him, and you see him draw a knife, and he's about to come down at your friend with his knife. Everyone sees it, and the general says you can't shoot. Do you shoot or don't you shoot? So you guys say you shoot. So let me tell you. You say shoot because you want to save that guy. But maybe the general knows that if you shoot and you reveal your cover at that minute, you've doomed the whole battalion. You're thinking about that soldier, but maybe the general knows more than you know, and maybe by your revealing the cover, you've just committed suicide for the whole battalion. You don't know, right? It could be that the general has information that there are so many members of Hamas around that there's no way you're going to get out. And if you shoot, you might save him for a minute, but you've killed the rest of the battalion. It could be. You don't know his calculation in saying not to shoot. You don't know. You can't shoot. Because it could very well be that you're killing everyone by shooting. You don't know. It could be you've revealed your position, and the general just heard that the Hamasniks have anti-tank missiles and who knows what, and once you've revealed your position, you're all goners. Could be. You don't know, right? So it's a devastating situation. But part of the way an army has to work is that you have to give trust to the general. You don't have a choice. He's got more knowledge than you do. He knows more about the terrain than you do, and if you're going to second-guess him, you really don't know. You don't know what it's going to cause. So it's very, very risky to go against the general or to go against the guidelines, because we view the situation from a very limited scope. We know very limited facts, and so we act based on those facts. But do we know the broader scope? A year and a half ago, a person was driving in Hebron. They threw a rock at him. They killed him, his child. And the police right away covered it up. And the police said it was an accident, it wasn't a terrorist act. Only days later was it uncovered that the police had hid the facts. So everyone went ballistic, and I said, the police are right. So people asked me, why are the police right? What do you mean? I said, Netanyahu was in the middle of dealing with Obama on how to deal with Iran. He had to factor broad national security. If the people of Hebron would have said, we don't care what the government says, we're rioting, so then that could have jeopardized a broader national security question and might have given Obama the out to say, I am not cooperating with you on dealing with Iran. I can't call that shot. You can't call that shot. Netanyahu has to call that shot. So that means I'm limited. I have a limited scope. So for me to twist the government's hand, so what does the police do? They call the shot. They say, we're not going to let a few people in Hebron who decide that they have to fight now. That's their battle. But who said that's the battle? Maybe it's in the national interest not to make that the battle. If we don't know the broader picture, then it's wrong of us to make decisions. We don't know the broader picture. So what? That's what I said in the last class. That doesn't mean we shouldn't act. We should act within the system. You know, when they were throwing rocks at us on our way to Kochav Yaakov, you have to understand, these were rocks that were about this big. You're not talking about a rock like this. You're talking about a rock that could bash a windshield of a bus. It's a very strong windshield. You're talking about those were huge rocks. The media didn't bother telling you about it, but every night we were getting these boulders thrown at our buses. So everyone said, you can't do anything. And little Netanel Frankenthal, who doesn't know too much and has never gotten too involved in politics, said, you can't do this. They're trying to kill us. You can't ignore this. And what we did was every week we worked on other politicians. At the time, Ehud Barak was the Minister of the Interior. And every week the Knesset began with a different minister from a different party bringing it to the table. Every week Barak had to answer, what are you doing to protect the inhabitants of Binyamin? It didn't work the first month, it didn't work the second month, but by the third month, they rounded up over 100 Hamas members. They laid ambush, and they rounded them up, and they set up a totally different system for security for the route that we take to Kochav Yaakov. I'm not saying the problem's solved. I'm saying we've moved forward. We've made advancements. The Shabak got involved. The army got involved. Everyone said, you can't do it. So the people in Kochav Yaakov notified the army, if you won't patrol, we will patrol. It's not illegal for us to patrol, but do you really want us to be patrolling and fighting Hamasniks? Because that's where you're going to put us. But okay, if that's where you're putting us, legally we are allowed to patrol, right? But what's going to be the next step? So the army said, okay, we're working on it, and they did work on it. I'm not saying we have to sit quietly, but I'm saying when a person asks, can I take matters into my own hands? That's a very difficult question, because very often taking matters into our own hands doesn't resolve anything. Yeah, you're asking me, should we have harsh reactions when this is happening? We should, but the harsh reactions have to be channeled a certain way. To say that the reaction has to be taking matters into our own hands is a little, it's different. The story goes, I don't know if it's true, the story goes that 25 years ago, when Kochav Yaakov was just being settled, the Arabs in the nearby village started throwing rocks at the people driving into Kochav Yaakov. I don't know if the story is true. The story goes that when it happened once or twice, everyone slung their rifle on their shoulder and walked into the village next door and shot at every dude shemesh. And every dude shemesh in town had a hole in it. They put a hole in every dude shemesh. They have water heaters on the roof. So they just walked through the town and put a hole in every water heater, put a bullet in every water heater. And by the time they got back to town, the head of the Arab village was on the phone with the rabbi of Kochav Yaakov saying, we want peace. But the world was a different place. You didn't have the media covering it. No one knows this story except for the people of Kochav Yaakov. I'm saying 25 years ago, it was a different story. Today, you have organizations, anti-Semitic organizations, that are giving the Arabs free video cameras, and they want this for the media. And you have to think about things in a different way. It's not a question of your village versus the next village. It's the next village using the cameras to spread pictures to the world. So you have to be really smart and factor what you could and cannot do. When is it right? When is it wrong? There are times in life when you have to do something. But most of what we're seeing today are times where what we have to do is work within the system to pressure the system to do what's right. And pressuring the system can be done. We gave examples of that last class. I want to end with an example of when someone has to do something outside the system. Hitler came to power. There was a yeshiva called Mir. The yeshiva called Mir was learning in a town called Mir. And the yeshiva had a lot of money. and the head of the yeshiva said, we're staying here. And one of his students said, we're all going to die. And he said, no, this will pass. There have been pogroms in the past. This will pass too. And one of his top students walked into his office and pulled out a knife and said, I'm going to kill you. And he said, what do you mean? He said, you have the money to take the whole yeshiva down to Shanghai. And we have the option to run now. And if you don't give us the money, I'm going to kill you and take the money. Because the halacha says that if someone's threatening your life, you kill him and you don't let him threaten your life. And when you have the capacity to take the whole yeshiva out of here and ensure that we don't die, and you're not doing it, then you are joining forces with those who want to kill us. And as such, if I have no choice, then I'm going to kill you and take the money. And with that, the yeshiva moved to Shanghai, and this student saved the lives. This student was a Rosh Yeshiva later on in New York. But he saved the lives of the whole yeshiva. So there are stories when a person has to do things out of the box. But most of the time, now included, when people think that they have to do something, they're acting emotionally. They're not acting rationally. And they're not acting in the nation's best interest. On the contrary, very often it's these acts that can really endanger the nation. I'm not saying there isn't a time. There is a time when you have to do things that are against the system. There is a time for the Hashmonaim to say, we're rebelling against the Greek Empire. There's a time for that. But most of history is a time where the people who thought to do it destroyed the Jewish people. As we find, the destruction of the Jewish people in the period of the Second Temple was by people who thought they should rebel against the Romans. The rabbi said, no, this isn't the right time. You won't win, you'll be destroying us. In the period of the First Temple, the prophet told the king, give in to the Babylonian Empire, you will lose. And if you continue fighting, people will suffer needlessly. He didn't listen. They lost. I'm saying throughout our history, most times that people rebelled and most times that people went against the system, it was destructive to themselves and to the Jewish people at large. So most of the time, nine times out of ten, the correct answer is find a way to do it within the system and not out of the system. Are there exceptions? Yes, but they're the exception. And even then, a person would be wise to consult. Before Pinchas gets up to kill the prince, Kazbi, he goes to Moshe and says, what should I do? Shouldn't we kill him? Moshe says, you're right. So then he goes and kills the prince. But he goes to Moshe first. That's why what he did was right. When Nadav and Avihu, the youngsters, big people, very big people, but they think this is a time for something extraordinary. Let's go take the fire pan into the Holy of Holies. They drop dead. When the spies come back and give a bad report and they say, and God says, that's it, you're not going into the land of Israel. So a group of people said, of course we have to go and we'll show God that we really love the land, we'll really do it. And they break the law. Moshe says, you shouldn't go. God said, no. And they say, no, we have to go. We have to show we love the land of Israel. They go, they all get killed like bees, you know, swat, 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 finished. They're all finished. And no one lives. So what did they accomplish? I'm saying throughout our history, even in the Torah, you see that most of the time, when people went against the system, they lost and they caused destruction to the Jewish people. And the same is true here. I think we definitely have to be bothered by where things stand, and we have to move to change it, but we have to move in ways within the system. I haven't seen people working on passing laws that would change the system. I haven't seen people working on passing a law that a soldier shouldn't be persecuted for defending the state of Israel, not only his own life. I haven't seen people working for laws to be passed that if someone works to protect the enemy of the state, he should be called a traitor. I haven't seen people working. There are basic things that logic would dictate. If you want to help the state, then within the law, things have to shift. And I don't see people working on that. I see people venting frustration and trying to work out of the system. We have to work to change the system. You know, if a boy throws a rock, then he's called a terrorist. If an Arab throws a rock, he's called a disruptive youth. The Arab can get a sentence of a week to a month, and the Jew can get a sentence of 5 years in prison for the same act. And no one's working to bring that to public attention. If someone would just take a series of cases from the court and start publicizing on Facebook, Here's what the court ruled for a Jew and an identical case for an Arab. Just start publicizing that on Facebook. You want to vent your anger? Do something positive with it. I'm saying there's real work that has to be done. This has to happen. I mean, I'm saying it's frustrating, so let's channel that frustration to moving public opinion. And again, if a person wants to do it, it can be done. We live in a small country, and it can be done. Public opinion can be swayed, and then things change. But I think that it would be wrong to try and work against the system and out of the system. The system, all in all, is doing a good job. At the end of the day, we have a state, we have electricity, we have water, we have security. We have problems. But we shouldn't let that obliterate all the good that's going on here. I mean, there's a lot of good. And I wouldn't fight the system. I would try to work with the system, as problematic as the system is. And I agree the system's problematic. So...